Welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. I'm laughing a little bit because actually this is a little bit different today. What we're going to do today is we're going to post in a moment a podcast that I was a guest on. It was a beautiful conversation that deeply moved me. I was interviewed by Jane Warrilow, who is the founder of Sacred Changemakers. What a beautiful podcast host Jane is. And so I felt very moved to share this conversation. It's kind of vulnerable because you're going to hear from me and my views. Normally the tables there are the other way around, and I'm the one asking the questions. So I've bailed on this in the past when someone interviewed me. I chickened out sharing it. And this conversation, I just felt like, hey, you just got to do it. So here it is. You're going to hear from Jane more. I'm going to invite her as a guest onto the Coaches Rising podcast soon. So I won't say too much more about Jane and Sacred Changemakers, other than that I feel a kindred spirit, to say the least, with Jane and her mission with Sacred Changemakers of inspiring coaches to move from being a coach to this archetype of a sacred changemaker that's so deeply resonant with how I hold things and the view I hold for coaches. So more to come from Jane on our podcast soon. And we're going to shift over now. And this is the Sacred Changemakers podcast where Jane interviews me. I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. It's the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do. And it can't feel, it can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness, the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Dethmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot.
Hey, Joel, welcome to the Sacred Changemakers podcast. I am really excited to introduce you to our audience, but let me first start by just asking you, how are you doing today, Joel?
I'm really delighted, Jane, to be with you. When our paths crossed, I was like, wow, how come I don't know Jane already? I felt such a kindred soul. So yeah, it's good to be here.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to our conversation. I know our audience is going to, just from our short interactions, I know our audience is going to really resonate with this conversation that we're about to have today. So let's see where we go. And I'd love to start by grounding us in the bigger picture. And, you know, we all know we're living in extraordinary times. There's so much uncertainty, so much turbulence. People are talking about collapse, but there's also some possibility kind of woven into that. So when you look at the times, Joel, that we're living in today, what do you feel is most needed from us as coaches and change makers?
Wow, the big question. I mean, of course, they're extraordinary times. And I think these times are, in a way, a clarion call for us as transformational practitioners into the depth of our practice, you know? And so I see these times as very alchemical, like a dojo. And when I went to art school, I always remember this saying where this was, when the going gets weird, the weird get going. And I feel like that's not to underplay the sense of collapse. I've certainly been through my own dark night of the soul experience around the kind of projected sense of future that I felt like I would have. I think these times are just calling for us each to play our own music as coaches, as practitioners, to meet ourselves in the depth of our souls and not to try to save the world. I don't think that ever worked anyway, and actually is one of the things that a lot of coaches I meet need to work through, really being of help to their clients in a particular way. Joanna Macy, I met once, and she said that when the ship goes down, it's time to celebrate. The transmission with which she said it, it was shocking. It was like there was such a radiant, mischievous sparkle in her eyes to bring together the sense of grief and loss of with a sense of indescribable devastation we can feel, but at the same time, the aliveness that brings out in us and the sense of appreciation and deep gratitude and the sacredness of life and the world. So I think if we can embrace all of this, I think it evokes something inside of us as practitioners. I mean, who knows where we're going?
You know, I think that's really true. But you said a lot there that I'd like to unpack. And I'd like to start with one of the very first things you said, which is to play our own music. Because as coaches and changemakers, that sounds like such an easy thing to say. Like, why wouldn't we play our own music? And yet in the world that we're living in, very often I notice how often it's almost like the world or different contexts is trying to get me to be something else. All right. So what do you mean by that, Joel? What does it mean to you?
It's a really rich question as well. You know, in a sense, you could say this might be one of the purposes of life. You know, in a way, I think when we play our own music, for me, it's when we've been through this journey of recognizing the different roles we've inherited from our upbringing, from our family system, being a good boy, a good girl. You know, what is it to be a good person in society? We inherit a lot, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but that can actually play out as we then interact with other people and our coaching clients. If we haven't started to look more deeply inside the ways we feel like we need to be value for money for our clients, for example, that can hinder and limit the expression of our genius or soul. So I think that's part of it. Part of it's recognizing the projections we placed onto the first half of life, where we think a good career and a marriage will lead to a fundamentally good life. And again, there's nothing wrong with those things inherently, but it's what we project onto them. So as we start to see through all that, you know, when maybe we encounter a shocking event, someone dies close to us, or right now what we're going through collectively, you know, where all the ways we've been doing things suddenly don't seem to make as much sense, then we start to question more deeply, and we start to recognize that we won't find the sense of safety and security that we were quite looking for. And that can feel scary, but actually what it opens up is this kind of more liberated expression of life through us, you know? And this is when I feel the music starts to come online. In a way, we could say there's a thread that's calling us forth, and we can look back over our lives and see this thread of the things that most move us and
were most inspired by, how that's part of this music. And I'm happy to share, you know, concrete examples if that makes it more useful. So those are some of the ways. And it's such a huge question, but I'll pause because,
Well, I mean, you've spoken there to something that feels, you know, on one level, I could say what you're speaking to is like self-improvement in a way. It's like becoming self-authored as an individual in life. But it feels there's a texture to what you're describing that feels much more, well, it feels deeper than that. And you described a thread calling us forward. So I've got to ask you, you know, when you look back on your own life, Joel, what have been the threads that have pulled you forward, that have called to you, that have got you deeply immersed in this work that you're doing now with the multiple perspectives that you hold?
So just before I answer that, what you just said about self-improvement and self-authored is really important. I think there's a massive paradigm shift taking place, which is about a shift away from self-improvement and beyond self-authorship. I think that's where the music comes in. Anyway, so, you know, hopefully we'll get there. If not, we do a part two or something. So my own life, I was thinking about this just the other day. You know, it's, if I look back at the things that moved me, I start to see a certain kind of theme or pattern to it. So, you know, if I look at the way I played with my Star Wars figures when I was a child, I would kind of attune to a certain kind of, what I would do is, I, instead of like running around like my friends were, I would put them in a kind of scene. And, you know, I was really attuned to the configuration of the figures. And there was this sense of patterning and beauty to it. And I didn't know that at the time, but once I got it to that place, I was like, oh, this is good. Yeah. So fast forward a few years, I'm an artist making paintings and installations. And in my studio, I would get into these states of rapture and flow making art. And, you know, I was holding space. I was attuning to beauty and aliveness in the painting. Some of the marks and the configurations I made just didn't really have this life to it, you know. And then other ones I made, it, you know, suddenly it takes, you can feel it. And I was a DJ in nightclubs, and I was quite lucky to play to big crowds. And so I, the configuration of songs and the relationship to the crowd as they were going, you know, really kind of getting into the music. And then as a coach, you know, holding space, attuning to that same sense of emergence and aliveness. So that's what I recognized. I've had other people reflect this back to me, but there were certain ingredients that were there in all of them. There was a sense of attunement, being a container. And actually later on, that sense of being a container started to feel more archetypal and energetic and somatic. And then this attunement to aliveness, to emergence, to the delight, the truth, beauty, and goodness inside of that. As I move through my life, it's as if I circle round that same theme and more of it is revealed to me. And when I coach from that place, like I said, it's not just an idea in my mind. It's a felt sense, an embodied feeling. When I coach from that place, that's where I'm at my best and I'm at my edge. So, yeah.
That makes a lot of sense to me. It really does. I mean, I'm not an artist in that way, but I do write poetry. And you're speaking to something that I really recognize here, something that kind of lies beyond the self in a way. Something, I hope I can explain it in a way that makes sense, but it's like a sacred flow that kind of, like you say, moves through me. And I hear you speaking of it moving through you rather than just you figuring out what it is you want to go and create or paint and then just doing that, right? There's something beyond the self. And maybe this ties us back to what you were saying about the self-authorship, that, you know, beyond self-improvement, beyond those kinds of changes, there is something deeper, you know, that goes beyond the limits of the kind of self-improvement paradigm. And a deeper, it feels sacred to me. It's the only word that I can describe. It's almost like, and I can feel it in this conversation now. You know, often I think you know, podcast, I'm interviewing someone, it's like a dialogue, but I sometimes think of it as a trialogue. Are we creating space for whatever it is that wants to emerge between us to come through, to have its say and almost have its way with us in a way? I just wonder, what does this feel like to you? How would you describe this flow that maybe it's consciousness emerging through you? I don't know how you'd describe it, but beyond that self-improvement, beyond the self, I hear you speaking to something else emerging. Does that make sense?
It's beautiful, yeah. I mean, I feel it as you point towards it as well. It's as if it gets brighter or louder. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it. I'm so pleased you speak about these conversations in that way, because I think when you look at coaching, when you look at podcasts, that's the best of what they can be, in a sense, is there's an intelligence that moves through to more people coming together and starts to cohere and download into existence, you know, and you can feel the best podcasts, and I can feel your presence as being an invitation into that place. Mm. So I think it is a feeling. It's this feeling of aliveness, and you see it. I don't know if you watch something like Britain's Got Talent, and I mean, I don't, to be honest, watch it, but sometimes I see clips from it. People have pulled them out because someone will come up and, you know, maybe it's someone dancing and there's something starts to come through that person and everybody's touched by it. There's a beauty to it that is just inherently beautiful for its own sake, you know? So, and I think this is where we talk about a cross-paradigmatic practice, yeah, and mixed mystical arts. If I get back to the thing around self-authorship, self-improvement, for me, what's happening right now is there's an awakening taking place. The amount of people interested in something beyond ourselves is unprecedented. And I think it's a response to our times. I think one of the things that's breaking down has been a paradigm in modernity that's emphasized the separate sense of self, the world of mechanistic parts, which has led to us overprivileging our analytical minds, which want to measure things, and science has excelled there. Amazing things have come from that, but we've lost certain things. And so what I see emerging now in the coaching industry is schools oriented and people coaching around an unfolding paradigm where we're not trying to, one of the problems of self-improvement, and you see it everywhere on YouTube, is it's like it's saying there's something wrong with you, mm, and you need to fix it. You know, so then you feel this sense of lack, and there's something in the imagined future that if you get to that place, you'll be okay. And it creates a tension. So instead, what emerging is, you know, this move to what if we're already whole right now, not just as an idea. And what if we let our experience be just the way it is, and that we actually orient towards coming to ever closer contact with ourselves around the things we love the most. And then that way of coaching gets you out of needing to deploy a process, you know, a psychological map, 5-stage process to get somewhere. And you're now working with the intelligence of the moment and what wants to shine through. And that's where this feeling can start to come in, this aliveness. It's like you feel it when you're, you know, and it really means you have to be humble. And it's actually liberating to let go of having to be a powerful coach in that sense. It invites us into a whole different curriculum of learning and maturity. But, you know, we're expanding beyond our minds and into this space of presence, and the numinous can shine through. So.
Yeah. You're reminding me, a few years ago, I spent some time in the Amazon rainforest with 3 different indigenous nations. And I met this glorious, well, he was a shaman, but he was the head of his village. And I remember him sitting with me, and he didn't speak a lot of English, so it came through translation. But he actually said to me, I was talking about change. And he said, no, it's nothing new. It's just about remembering. And I've really sat with that for a while. And as you were speaking there, Joel, I could really feel that. What if change isn't? Because so much of, particularly the self-improvement, is around, and coaching, it's like, how can we bring something more to you that you don't already say no or whatever? how can we expand your knowledge base, particularly in some of my work with leaders? What if it's not that? What if it is about remembering what we've lost? What if it is about tapping into, maybe it's the collective intelligence. Maybe that's what we're pulling from. But it feels like when you said we've lost things, I often say when I look out into the world, it feels like we've lost our soul, particularly in many organizations and corporate life. And it's like, what if there's a different texture to the changes that are wanting to be birthed at this time? What if it is just about us listening deeper and allowing more than kind of just getting out of our own way and unlearning more than it's about learning? I don't know, but I do know your mixed mystical arts really resonates, because for me at this stage in my career, it does feel like pulling on multiple paradigms. And even I would say, and I don't know how you will respond to this, but multiple dimensions of life, not just in the physical plane.
Yeah, it's beautiful reflections. I so appreciate them. I want to give a nod to my friend, Sean Wilkinson, who's just a real genius in this territory, who coined that term mixed mystical arts. And I was like, I'm going to borrow that from you. We meet regularly and we get into conversations like the one we're having right now. I do feel this expansion out of, you know, pure rationality is really important, and important in my own life. And I think from what it seems like to me, and when I listen to other wise people, the complexity of the challenges we face are, you know, not going to, we've been trying to solve them with just our kind of analytical, rational, and I don't want to denigrate that, you know. Like throwing out thinking is a really important part of our experience, but it's when it's aligned with other faculties that we become more cohered. I think that, but it's obvious that we're not really kind of solving things right now in the way we could. And what faculties could we actually tap into that would be very generative and where we might get certain solutions from, you know? And I've seen this in my own life, but I've found a few things really important to me is like vibrational intelligence has become incredibly important. And I think, not surprisingly, as we mature and move out of a materialist paradigm, quantum physics moved out of it 100 years ago, but we're still in mainstream society. That's the dominant view. This kind of vibrational mastery and experience is becoming important. I think imaginal work, which is often denigrated to daydreaming, but it's incredibly powerful. Working with dreams and imagination, it can tap into very shamanic territories. So, you know, even modalities like internal family systems, which I use, when you learn in internal family systems, it has a structure to it, but actually you can move beyond that structure and it liberates that practice and it becomes very shamanic, deeply archetypal and imaginal and collective. I've found it very powerful to start to kind of play with these different realms of experience, intuition, art, systemic kind of intelligence, and what they open us up to, you know, the kinds of insights and revelations that start to come through with those experiences. And, you know, just one more before I, you know, beyond psychology as well, because a lot of coaching is based in a psychological view, and we've psychologized life a lot now, you know, if you look all the, that's a good thing, you know, is, and then we can reduce everything to psychology and, you know, the kind of living animate world out there that it's not really out there that we are, you know, in deep intimacy with. We can lose connection with that if we psychologize everything. How about for you, Jane?
Well, before I answer that, though, I really want to underline something that you just said, because I think it's really important in this conversation. And you were talking about psychology, and then you said, and if there's three letters that I think are really important during these times. It's that word and. Because I think this is what's incredible about these times we're living in, is we can be influenced by so many incredible bodies of work that all come into change almost through different portals or different doorways. And the intersections between these bodies of work, to me, is where the magic lies, right? And I see sometimes a lot of coaches, they can be, you know, master coaches, they can be at mastery level, and yet they've walked through a very narrow door. And it's almost like they only know, I don't know, I'll just like gestalt coaching or something. That's all they know. But for me, in these times when we have such access to such incredible bodies of work that have got deep roots, you know, from a long time. Like, I know you have had access to like somatics, to Thomas Hubble's work on trauma, like circling, all these different things. But I'd love to know how they converge in your practice, because for me, the magic is in the in-between of these, how they integrate into form in a way while we're inspiring change with clients. So how do you hold this multiplicity of knowledge in a way, but also transcend it into the wisdom that lies in between? Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. I think what's helped me greatly is having what I'd call a generative ontology. And that's a fancy way of pointing to what I just described with an unfolding paradigm. It's like a lot of theories are more prescriptive. You know, it's describing types and stages, and then you read about it, but then you're not quite sure what do you actually do? So having, for me, a way of being, which is, you know, Steve March has been a big mentor for me around this, but circling also is a very generative ontological practice. And it's, you know, so it's this experience of, instead of trying to change our experience to get somewhere, we meet it as it is, and it reveals more and more of its depths. We let it be, and then let it unfold. So having that I can then start to use that. It's like a principle underlying all the other modalities, and it weaves them all together. So, you know, then I think also it's useful to kind of have certain models that can show us like skillful means. And I think this is why cross-paradigmatic practice is useful. So, you know, what depth is showing up with our client right now? Are they identified with a part, you know, in which case we might want to, you know, help them name that part and disidentify from it? Are they deeply immersed in a felt experience or a felt image, you know, which might invite them going more deeply into that? Are they landing in a quality of presence, you know, and they're really experiencing their wholeness, within which I wouldn't want to help them disidentify from that, you know, whereas with a part, I might. With presence, it would be helping them inhabit that experience more fully. So I think this has been really key for me when I work with dreams with my clients. It's the same process. It's like we inhabit the dream, and they experience a perspective within a dream as fully as possible. And then it begins to unfold, and we stay with that felt image. You had a beautifully articulated question. I think I've answered part of it, but yeah.
Let me ask you something else, because as I'm listening to it, I'm kind of putting myself in the shoes of a listener and thinking, would you say that there are any risks when coaches stay in one paradigm, one methodology, or maybe one way of working?
I think so. Yeah, I think skillful means. So I think there are, you know, one of the risks is you're not bringing the right modality that would, you know, be most effective in that moment. You know, everything becomes a nail because you've got a hammer, so to speak. I mean, maybe there's even a potential for doing harm. In that sense, I think there's potential for doing harm if you're working cross-paradigmatically as well. Mm. I think there's just a way that we can reduce our client, person we're with, to a particular lens, you know, if that's all we have, it's like we reduce them to seeing them through that lens. And now that can bring some benefits. You know, you could become exceptionally well skilled in a very precise lens and method, you know, Gestalt coaching or something, which is a bit of an irony saying that because Gestalt means whole, but but people aren't one thing, you know, they're not just parts, they're not just systems, they're very complex and beautiful. So I think it really invites a kind of greater sense of possibility of unfoldment when you hold these different paradigms. Keeps you out of dogmatism. You remain more humble, I think. The different paradigms you start to learn, you become more humble. And I think in a way, probably the greatest benefit is if you've worked with different paradigms, who are you that can hold those different paradigms? That's, I think, the most fundamentally important part. So when I was a coach at the beginning, I still train in coaching, and it can still happen where you meet this beautiful approach, but then you absorb it and you actually become socialized by it. What I mean is, it's like almost that's who I am now. I'm a, you know, Gestalt coach. And then it takes me a while. It's like I have to shake it off. It's like, wait a minute, because that can take me out of that music that we talked about earlier. It's like I'm now coaching in the way the Gestalt coaching school trained me to do it. And I'm trying to follow that process. So a really important part of a coach's journey is to say, what's my theory of change? Yeah, and this is where they can start to weave together all the different elements of what they've inherited, which is often based on their inspiration, this thread we talked about. And so that's really powerful. You can start to land in that sense of kind of genius more. And I think it invites you into this very fluid place where, in a sense, you know, even the best coaches I've met, even the role of a coach is very light, and you know, that comes with a lot of baggage. We haven't talked about this. So in a sense, they're in a transformational connection, which is unfolding. This is very potent. This is where this kind of numinous feeling can come in.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is, for me, the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this, and it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches. Because our times are calling for something deeper. We've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May. So
I had goosebumps when you were talking there, because you were speaking to something that I think, again, is really important, but we don't often talk about as coaches. Like, we talk about the way we inspire change in others. But what we don't talk about is how that impacts our beingness, So I just had goosebumps when you were speaking to that, because to me, that is the key of what is being called out from us at this time. Like, change isn't just out there. It's not just with our clients. It's not just in the context in which we're working. It's in every moment. It's in our own essence, our own sense of our own journey, in a way, our own unfolding, our own emerging. and how it changes us. Surely that's just as important.
I found great liberation when I started to ask, what kind of experience do I want to have when I'm coaching? Because it's so often about the client, you know. And actually, I think a massive growth area for a lot of coaches I meet is for them to bring themselves more in the coaching. And I don't mean the coaching becomes about them and they start sharing stories about them all the time, but to actually bring their, what's the impact that being in relationship with the client is having on them, and to share that more boldly, because that can bring you right into the immediacy of this transformational connection. But just something else you said, which is so, our mutual friend Peter Hawkins comes to mind, which is,
yeah,
in a way, we could say, like, you know, I'm here as Joel and you're Jane, and, you know, we both like things and we want to share that and explore it. But it feels more to me like life wants us to have a conversation and move through us. It's a bit like what we were saying earlier. And
yeah,
and that it's not like I'm serving my purpose and you're serving your purpose. It's like we're serving a purpose, an ecological purpose, a much bigger purpose than you could be reduced. And I think that's part of where we're being invited to go.
Yeah.
As a species, really.
Yeah. In many ways, this feels at the heart of things for me, in a way, because, you know, when I've reflected back on my own career, I've noticed how impacted I've been in my career by, I'll call it hyper-individualism. I don't know what else to call it. Like, a lot of my career has been situated in what I now think of lovingly as the I, me, mine conversation. And that can go through all levels of systems. My career, my team, my organization, my country, whatever it is, it can go through that. And I think you're absolutely right, Joel, that we're being kind of encouraged to move beyond this worldview right now and into a more relational, systemic, or ensouled paradigm, dare I say. I know we have a lot of listeners that are thinking, well, yeah, but what does that mean? You know, how do I do that? And what does that mean for me in my coaching practice? What would you say to that?
Yeah, you asked some good questions. I want to bring Peter on here. He would have a lot of good things to say about this. This is one of the things I've asked Peter a lot. I've learned from him a lot over the last few years, because when you listen, people talk about systemic coaching. It can, if it's not, and Peter doesn't do it in this way, but if it's not careful, it sounds like really complex, rational thing. And it's like, well, what's the experience of that in, you know, ordinary existence? And so I think I've never really answered this question. This is such a brilliant question, but I think in a way, this is the paradigm shift. It's like we've been ensconced in that hyper-individuality, and it has brought some good things, but it's come at a cost. And, you know, the epidemic of loneliness, isolation, we feel. And I think there's a deep movement towards embracing our interdependence, and
yeah,
even how, you know, some people say, like, the relationship between things is more important than the things themselves. So now we start to get into where it gets a bit more practical, which is, in some sense, Jane, there's a deep intimacy between us right now. My identity includes you on a fundamental level. Mm. And that's inspiring. And I think where it gets very practical is that, you know, we're always arising moment to moment in context, you know, in relationship to our environment, the others around us, our roles. And that is an embodied vibrational experience. So as we do our deep, I'm not sure I'm answering your question, but I'm just going with it. As we do our, you know, our deep inner work, which then, you know, the question is, like, inner, outer starts to become,
right,
it's a useful distinction on one level. But when you start to look more intimately, it's like the world is a mirror to our experience. So we can actually do our integrative work and start to attune and open to this sense of systemic relationality on an embodied level. And I think this is where we kind of become more powerful. Power is a kind of dirty word, and often people think it means power over, but yeah, there's a certain enjoyment and power and artistry of life that opens up. So yeah, I'll stop there. I don't know if that makes sense. I never thought about the question you asked really until you asked me.
It's so interesting though, because I think what we're starting to point towards now is like, it's a deepening of what we were talking about earlier. And this call to coaches from just working with individuals as though they're some kind of isolated entities, and starting to bring in the whole context and dare I even say the collective here. Now, I know you said right at the very beginning, coaches are not about changing the, you know, it's not for us to save the world in a way. And I think that's absolutely right on one level. But I do think there's a role for us to play here in the collective. But it's almost like a through lane. It's almost like a portal from the individual that ripples out. Because I do believe that as coaches, another thing that I don't see discussed very often is how we, through the changes that we inspire in our clients, how we actually impact things like culture, right? Which, of course, is a collective sense. And I feel when we hold this space and this, it's like, and I think I've heard you say this, coaching becomes more like a transmission on multiple levels, including a frequency of change that wants to emerge here, that I'm not going to fight, I'm going to allow that into the conversation. But I wonder in your experience, how, if I say it very simply, the shift from the individual to collective, is that something that's alive for you in your work? And if so, how does that shift the way you approach transformation?
It's a beautiful question. I mean, I think it's incredible to, I really enjoy being Joel for a start. So yeah. I love being me. I went down some rabbit holes, spiritual rabbit holes that kind of pointed towards like, you know, this no self experience, the self is an illusion. I didn't find that particularly fulfilling. And that's a long conversation we could have. So I'm saying that because it's not that the sense of individuality isn't important. And in another way, I'm humble about my capacity to hold the collective in my sphere of concern, you know, in ways that I've met others that do, you know, and in incredibly beautiful ways. And in another way, how can we not, you know, how can we not do that when we walk around and we're touched by the people we meet and we just are, you know, and the things we see on television, which sometimes are incredibly heartbreaking and sometimes incredibly inspiring. So I feel like a beginner, you know, with my own practice and really tapping into collective intelligence, or the how to really have that move through my coaching. But I do find, you know, this idea of what does the world want us to explore in our conversation today. You know, one of Peter Hawkins' questions, very powerful. As I find it in my own life, what do you want with me? You know, as an inquiry. And I start to hang around in groups of people, like I've just come back from the Circling Festival, where sometimes you really start to tune into incredible experiences of a kind of collective intelligence of the group, and these kind of transpersonal states that shine through. And feels like we just scratched the limit, really, in terms of what's possible for us. And if you contrast that with the polarization that's so loud right now, particularly online.
Yeah.
So I don't have a lot of clarity for you around this. And I think that's an important message for coaches. I mean, if I just speak for myself, recently I fell into really embracing being confused.
Right.
And not even keeled. I saw how some of these things I hold dear, like being cohered, being present, landing in a certain kind of clarity, are beautiful things, but it also become limits to the next phase of my unfolding. So, yeah.
That feels really important, what you've just said. And there's an insight landing for me at the moment, which I don't think I've ever thought of it in this way before. But it feels like when you just express that, that being uncertain, being confused, being out of kilter is somehow not okay. It's like culturally we've made it wrong, and we've put clarity and, you know, performance and all these other things on a pedestal. But of course, it's in what we're speaking to, it's the portal, surely. Because unless you can stay with, be in relationship with that, I don't know how you can truly expand the possibilities available to you.
I feel the invitation of that in your being right now. And it's beautiful. And particularly in the coaching industry, for me as a coach, it can really feel like, oh, I need to be really on it to help my clients. And there's a truth that if we're living in our impeccability and our integration, we can serve deeply. But I mean, the difference for me between giving lip sync to being in the unknown, you know, which I've talked about a lot in my life, and actually feeling the deep terror even that can arise when I'm like, what that actually means to let go of certain structures and beliefs, to love that part of me that was very vigilant and wanting to control life and hold it all together. I think we could do with, like, transformation can be devastating.
Yeah.
And I didn't always honor that when I was younger.
Yeah.
I had a certain hubris, a certain kind of, young bravado about it all.
It's interesting you say that, because when I look back on my life and the thresholds of change and transformation I've been through, some of the biggest and most potent changes have come from trauma. They've come from not knowing. They've come from being in a space where I had no idea what was going to happen next. It was almost like I lost my identity, I lost the world and relationships, everything, because I was actually terminally ill at one point. And it's like I was literally sent home to die. And that went on for 3 years. And in that cocoon, in that, it felt, looking back, it felt like a chrysalis, but I thought I was dying, literally. And it's interesting that you speak to that, because again, all the research shows humans don't really like change. And here we are as coaches, you know, trying to sell it and stuff. But again, we don't speak to that. And to me, what we're starting to touch on now, Joel, feels like the difference between certification for coaches and initiation. That's what it feels like. It's like, can we be with ourselves in the darkest of times? Therefore, can we be with others in that space? And can we also be in relationship with the collective, with everything that's going on right now throughout humanity? And for some reason, that feels part of the call for me. I don't want to put words in your mouth, and
yeah,
but it feels part of it.
Well, you know, I'm stunned because the from certification to initiation was something I felt very strongly arising as well. I think that's when someone introduced me, and then you were using that phrase, I think, and I was like, wow. In a way, it's shocking, but in another way, it's not, because I think that's an example of the way that intelligence can erupt through multiple places. And I mean, I think this gets back to music as well. It's like, there's a lot of good work can be done in a kind of first phase of transformation, which can be about building authenticity and success in maybe more traditional ways. But then I think we're talking about something different here. And I was thinking about death, you know, I was feeling that it seems to be such a core part of this. And I had a couple of phases, one a few years ago, of like severe spiritual crisis, like dark night of the soul. It was, people use that phrase like they had a bad day or something. It was like, you know, but no, this was like weeks of desolation. And I think it's like you having your heart broken open. And a lot of those, like, this is where it gets back to those projections about what life was meant to be, kind of stripped away, and it's devastating. And but there's something about that suffering that is so formative and can bring about a kind of abandonment, you know, of like a wildness and a, I mean, the poignancy of life sometimes is just breathtaking. I mean, my daughter, she's 6, and every day I feel this sense of poignancy of grief and utter love as she changes every day. It's like I want to fix her, but I can't. It's like such a great metaphor for life, you know, but if we try and hold on.
Yeah.
So I'd love to be in that shared space, you know, sitting around the fire with you, with other beings, just singing wildly and sharing in our love, you know?
Yeah. It's funny, the next question that was arising was about, I was going to say, what do you see our role then as coaches? And as I said it, what came up was, no, but it's not the role, is it? It's the soul of what's being asked to emerge through us. So role and soul, answer it however you like. But I feel there's a collective call to the industry. I think there's, I would even go so far, Joel, to say is, I feel there's, we're being asked to devote ourselves to something. I can't fully articulate what it is, but I have an intuitive sense of that. Feels different to just, this is who I am and this is my identity, this is my brand and this is what I do. It feels, yeah, it feels sacred. It feels devotional. Feels reverent in some way.
I think in a way you do know. I mean, I'll speak for you.
Go ahead.
So you speak of it very clearly, in a way, very beautifully, and maybe it's hard to put one word to it, that's, you know, to collapse it down into one thing. I do feel, and I've also talked to quite a number of well-known people in the field, that there's, it's tricky here, I feel like on the one hand I want to say there's a way in which certification and everything we're alluding to with that can actually inhibit this kind of evolution and take the life out of it and kind of get stale. I also want to honor the good intentions and the good work that's being done. So it's paradoxical, but initiation, maybe it is a kind of humility and yet it's paradox of humble, ensouled, giving service. don't really know. I think that maybe this is it, Jane. It's like maybe we're feeling that sense of like it hasn't cohered yet. We don't really know what it is, but we know what we want to let go of, and we know that it's about something more than how we've defined what success is in the world and what it means to evolve and grow and to be fully human. Yeah.
I'm going to say something now, and even as I'm thinking it in my head, it feels like a box that's too small for what I feel this is. But I do see the future of coaching being vibrational. I see it as frequency. I see it as multidimensional. But I also wonder about, and I've also said this in the leadership space, so I'll say coaches and leaders, but I see coaches as leaders, the leaders of change. Like coaches and leaders as channels rather than what you said about certification to initiation, I think that's the journey. I think in the beginning, we do need those bodies of work. We do need the certifications. We do need to understand the structures and the way things work here in the physical plane. But I think then there's a maturity and a transcendence. I mean, I don't know whether I'd say on the path to mastery, that's something that maybe people would understand if I say it that way, but it feels like then you transcend because you have the structures to be able to, I guess, have the insights to move beyond. And I love that word beyond. It feels so invitational to me, like beyond coaching, what's there? And yeah, it's also making me wonder, Joel, when you think about your work in the world and you think about the world that we're living in and this call that we've spoken to, what would you say your work is in service of? Maybe it's your life. What's your life in service of?
At the moment, the way I would articulate that is it's in service of the expression of truth, beauty, and goodness, of aliveness, beauty in the world of expression. I know the experience is much more palpable than, you know, trying to put the words to it, but it's that moment of like, just this is it. I think you're right. I think the future of coaching is vibrational, and we are being invited to be channels, since that's important to me, that path of practice.
So I'm noticing the time. So I just want to ask you one final question, really. Maybe there's something you would like to have shared in this conversation. Maybe we haven't got to it. Or maybe there's just some words of wisdom you'd like to leave our listeners with. What might it be?
A quote from Andor. It's his recent series on Disney Plus. Beautiful. One of the characters says, "I burn my life for a sunrise I'll never see." And at first that sounds kind of very like a martyr, you know, but he's so alive when he shares it. And we're bathing in the sunrises that other people have burned their lives for. And that's what Joanna Macy was shining. That was what she was transmitting when she said it. It's like burning our lives for a sunrise we'll never see is a wholly meaningful and enlivening endeavor. And it just lights me up. So when the going gets weird, the weird get going.
I love it. Thank you for bringing us full circle back to the beginning. Oh gosh, Joel, I don't have words for this conversation today. It was just such a delight to be in your presence and just to experience what emerged through us. Thank you so much, my friend.
You're an exquisite space holder. I love the depth of your soul and your passion, Jane. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com put your name in the sign-up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.